हरिः ॐ सहनवतु सहनौ भुनक्थु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यप्रभुनित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैतगदाधर शिवसरिगौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
So now we've had that the Kaurava's been trained, and then the Duryodhana and his brothers, and also all the other princes, they went to fight for the purpose of the Dakshin for Drona, and they were defeated by Drupad. Then Arjuna and his two brothers and Bhima, then they went out leaving Yudhishthira with Drona, and then they defeated Drupad and brought him back. And then in this way, then, you know, the what was the purpose of Dronacharya had been achieved. And we see that Drona was very pleased, said he would be the best, you know, so with the blessings of Guru and that, it would be very nice. And we see that he asked him for him specifically. There was one more dakshin, that if there was an opportunity for fighting when it comes up in the future, that Arjuna wouldn't shy away from fighting with him. So in other words, Drona is understanding where all this is going. Arjuna at this point doesn't. So that's where we are left. So continuing in the sixth chapter. The Kurus had heard of a wonderful occurrence in Mathura, the city where Kunti had been born. Kunti had a brother named Vasudev who had been imprisoned by the wicked king Kamsa. Right? So Kunti and Vasudev are brothers and sisters. So the Pandava's mother is the aunt of Krishna. Right? This powerful monarch had been viciously terrorizing Brahmins and other kings. Hearing a divine prophecy that Vasudeva's eighth child would kill him, Kamsa imprisoned both Vasudeva and his wife, Devaki. He then killed their first six children at birth. But somehow, despite Kamsa's vigilance, the seventh and eighth children, Balaram and Krishna, had escaped death. By some mystical arrangement, Krishna had been carried away from Mathura and raised in Vrindavan, a small village of cowherds, by its leader, Nanda. The great Rishi said that Krishna was in fact the Supreme Lord, and that it had been by his own divine arrangement that he had gone to Vrindavan. Right? So the Rishis know who Krishna is. Because the Supreme Lord is always himself, he's always existent, so he has no birth, he has no disappearance. But we see that for pastimes, to have, you know, nice interactions and all this, then there's always, you create an environment in which to do that. Like friends get together and they want to do something, so they create something to do, some game or some activity or some discussion or like that. Then they have a nice interaction. So Krishna therefore appears, even though he's always in his place in the spiritual world, he descends and appears in pastimes here on the earth. And this way, then, we get an opportunity to think about how Krishna's appeared, because it's always going to be special. He's not forced to take birth. So how he'll come is always in an amazing way. So then he appears, and then he goes from the jailhouse in Mathura, then by the arrangement of Yoga Maya, then all the guards are asleep, the gates open, and Vasudev takes him to Vrindavan, where then he's raised by Nanda Baba. And then, you know, so like this, all these wonderful things go on. So Krishna does this just to attract the minds of the devotees. So something to think about. As Krishna is always thinking of the devotees, so Krishna then acts in such a way that what he does is also very attractive, so then the devotee is always thinking of him. The Kurus were amazed to hear from the sages that God himself had appeared in the neighboring kingdom of the Yadus. Right? Because they're in Delhi. And then this is, you know, Mathura is not so far from there, and just next to Mathura is Vrindavan. So they were very amazed that the Supreme Lord had come and appeared just very close to where they are. When he became a youth, Krishna had returned to Mathura and killed Kamsa with his bare hands. This tremendous deed astonished all those who saw it and confirmed to them Krishna's divine identity. Because Kamsa, no one else could deal with him. Even the demigods were afraid of him. You know, he had all these asuras and everything. He's very, very powerful. So when Krishna just killed him with his bare hands, then it just shows that he wasn't that special. Or one could understand it that if he was so powerful and Krishna can kill him with his bare hands, why is that? None of the demigods could do it. So he's the Supreme Lord himself. Right? But he just comes to show that he doesn't have to do something great. Like with Kamsa, he doesn't necessarily want to engage in a battle. So he'll just, he jumped up into the stands, grabbed him by the hair, dragged him down into the wrestling arena, and then sat on his chest and just beat him. So, and he does that just to show, to bring attractive aspects for the devotees. Because Krishna doesn't need to personally kill the demons. His external energy is every living entity in the material world is dying. So she'll take care of it anyway. But Krishna, just to give something for the devotees to discuss and think about, then Krishna performs all kinds of wonderful things. Kamsa had struck fear even into the gods' hearts. There had been no earthly king capable of standing before him. But the young Krishna, still only a boy, and his brother Balaram, had overpowered Kamsa's troops and generals, finally killing the king along with his evil ministers. Right? So they even, beforehand they killed the big elephant, Puvayala Pita. And so he was a huge elephant, war elephant. So they're really, really strong. So then Krishna, they killed him and then took his tusks, had those big tusks. So they carried him on their shoulders like clubs, like that. So, they did just all these wonderful arrangements. The two brothers then became chiefs of the Yadu dynasty. They maintained a friendship with the Kurus in Hastinapur, taking a special interest in the welfare of their aunt Kunti and her five fatherless sons. Balaram, also said by the rishis to be a manifestation of the Supreme Godhead, became famous as the peerless mace fighter. At Drona's request, he agreed to train Bhima and Duryodhana at the skills of handling a mace. Thus Balaram spent time in Hastinapur. While there, he learned of the fierce rivalry and envy the Kauravas felt towards their cousins. When Krishna heard this, he became concerned for Kunti and her sons. Therefore, he asked one of his advisors, Akrura, to visit Hastinapur and assess the situation and see if he could be of any help. Right. So during the time then when Drona is training them, then Balaram was asked by Drona himself to teach Duryodhana and Bhima club fighting, because they were the best, so they would be worthy students. So that's why it's said that Duryodhana was a student of Balaram's. But generally what you don't hear is Bhima was also like that. So because he would behave nicely towards him and deal properly as a teacher and all that, therefore then they had a nice relationship. But he could see that there's some problem in the palace between the cousins. He mentioned this to Krishna, right? Because the Pandavas are actually their cousins. And so he's mentioning that it appears that it's not working out well. The five of them and then the 100 brothers, they're not very comfortable. So then Krishna then says, okay, let me send someone mature, Akrura, he's elder, he's respected by everyone. Let him go there and see the situation. He'll stay for some time, to visit Kunti and that, and then like this, then he'll be there, he'll be able to see what's going on, and he may be able to do something or give some advice, or when he comes back he can discuss it with Krishna. The Kurus received Akrura in friendship. Kunti was overjoyed to see him. She inquired about her kinsmen and friends in Mathura, because she's originally from Mathura. Kunti especially wanted to know everything about Krishna, whom she accepted as the Supreme Lord, right? Because the Pandavas are all devotees. The mother's a devotee, they're all devotees. Does my nephew Krishna think of me and my sons? She asked. Does he know how I am suffering in the midst of my enemies, like a doe in the midst of wolves? Kura asked her to tell him more about the situation in the city. She began to explain everything. Kunti knew that Duryodhana and his brothers were always intriguing against her sons. The Kauravas could not tolerate the Pandavas' superior prowess. The humiliation that they recently received at Kampilya had made them even keener to dispose of Pandu's sons, right? Already as it is, the Pandus come because they're so nice and properly behaved in character. Then all the elders and that like them better than Duryodhana and his brothers. Then they try to get rid of him. Then he comes back even more strong. You know, so at every turn, then when they have their all the training, then Arjuna's better. Bhima's at least as good as him, if not better. And, you know, so all these things come up. Then when they go for the Dakshin and they go to fight with Drupad, and then in that fight, then we see that they get defeated very easily. Even the local people are throwing things at them, and that's all of them together. And then Arjuna and his two brothers with Bhima, then they are able to defeat the army, and capture Drupad when they couldn't even get close to Drupad, let alone defeat the army. Kunti spoke to Akrura with tears in her eyes. "Will Krishna come here to console me? I always pray to that all-powerful protector of the universe. Indeed, I see no other shelter for myself and my sons." Kunti cried out to Krishna in front of Akrura. He gently reassured her that Krishna was often speaking about her and had sent him to analyze the situation. Right? So he's saying Krishna himself had... Because Balaram observed, he told Krishna. Krishna is now sending Akrura to find out more detail. So Balaram was there, he just only noticed. But Akrura can go there and spend time and talk with people and all that. Does that make sense? So Baladev, he was there, so he's just there as the teacher teaching the boys the mace fight. So he'll observe it on the side. So then it was by Krishna's arrangement, Akrura came. He's taking care of actually finding out what's going on and now what to do. And then he'll go back and send Krishna. So that way, explaining that to Kunti, then she'll feel, you know, that Krishna's caring. Both Akrura and Vidura comforted Kunti and reminded her about her son's extraordinary birth, right? They're born from the Devatas, so things will go well for them. The Pandava boys were expansions of the gods. There was no way the evil Kaurava princes could overcome them. Because ultimately, bad can't overcome evil. Temporarily, you can create some disturbance, but because good is established by Krishna, and Krishna is the Lord of the universe, so good always prevails. By the time factor, then sometimes you see that, you know, like in the universal affairs, that the demigods will have to leave heaven, the demons take over, but it's temporary. It always goes back to the normal. So even in the devotees' lives, things get are not ideal, things get disturbing or unfavorable, but it's always a temporary thing, because the point is that one is, you know, absorbed in Krishna, one is Krishna conscious, so Krishna will always make things so that it's the best for Krishna consciousness. Akrura remained in Hastinapur for several months. Then, when he felt he had understood the situation fully, he decided it was time to return to Mathura. Before leaving, however, he met with Dhritarashtra to offer some advice. Ultimately, the blind king was responsible for his son's acts, and he could certainly check their behavior if he chose, because he was the king. Akrura said, "My dear king, you have attained the throne only because your brother Pandu passed away prematurely. Therefore, Pandu's sons have first claim on the throne. You should not discriminate against them in favor of your own sons." Akrura had advised Dhritarashtra to rule the kingdom strictly according to moral principles, right? As the Shastra says, that's how you should do. He should treat all his subjects equally, and what to speak of the Pandavas, his own nephews and heirs to the throne. Over-attachment for one's close relatives is simply born of ignorance. Every creature in the world is born alone and dies alone. He experiences the results of his own good and evil deeds, and in the end leaves the present body to accept another. The belief that one person is the relation of another is nothing more than illusion. Right? So all these things, you know, in the same way as arranged as Krishna comes to perform pastimes to interact with his devotees, since the living entity wants to be in the material world separate from Krishna, then Krishna gives the opportunity that there's some reason that you can interact. So therefore you have relations, you have all these different things, and occupations, and then making of money and taking care of family and doing different things and trying to fulfill desires. But none of that has anything to do with the soul. So then what happens is it's actually just in the same way as some pastime that's created by Krishna, that the living entities get an opportunity, depending upon their good work or bad work, they get nicer situations to try to fulfill their desires, or worse situations to try to fulfill their desires. So none of this actually has anything to do with the living entity. So that's why when the living entity tries to impress himself and others with this nice arrangements, then they're dissatisfied, because the soul's eternal and the material arrangements are temporary. So then the association of the great devotees and that, then we can start to understand this, and we can start to then realign our life so that we see everything in context of Krishna. Then it takes on the eternal platform, because then the eternal means the benefit we get is eternal, the remembrance of Krishna, absorption in Krishna. The situations around us, yes, they're going to change and adjust and all that, but the position of the relationship with Krishna and with Krishna's devotees, that's eternal. While in the material world, anyone we have a relationship with here, with time, it's all gone. It's all gone. So then he's pointing this out to Dhritarashtra, that you're the king, you're supposed to, you have your duties, you manage the kingdom till the Pandavas are ready, because it should have been Pandava was there, he's the king, and then when his sons are mature, they would rule. But since he died before they were mature, then Dhritarashtra was there to manage. And so now as the sons grow up, it should be now when they're ready that Yudhishthira would sit on the throne. The Pandavas would be the ones sitting on the throne. So he shouldn't deal in an improper way against the scriptures and try to put his own sons in there when they're not actually the appropriate ones. One, they're not technically the ones, the heirs. And two, we see is by their behavior and character, they're not their ideal kings. Good managers, good administrators, but because they're not devotees, the public won't be spiritually benefited. The material life will go on, but they won't make any spiritual advancement. Dhritarashtra listened in silence as Akrura spoke. He understood the implication of his words. Akrura had made it clear that the Pandavas' cause was righteous, and that by opposing them, he would reap only grief. Dhritarashtra sat silently as Akrura concluded, "By favoring your own sons, O Lord of the Earth, you are acting out of ignorance. How then can you hope for any good result? Ignorance always leads to sorrow. Therefore, act virtuously and deal with Pandu's sons as they rightfully deserve." Okay, because Dhritarashtra acts badly, it may look good to now, but in the long run it'll be bad. As we see from the Battle of Kurukshetra, everything is destroyed. Everything that Dhritarashtra wanted, down to the last man, is destroyed. Nothing's left. It's not like, okay, means if the Pandavas had become kings, they would be kings, Dhritarashtra would be there in their respective position, the Kauravas would be there in their respective positions, they'd all be living together. But when trying to make Duryodhana the king, Duryodhana and all his brothers and everyone connected to them is completely destroyed. And so they're left with nothing. So, and then the Pandavas take the throne anyway. So we see is that by that improper behavior, you get improper results. Dhritarashtra sighed. "Wise Akrura, your words are like the immortal nectar of the gods. I could go on hearing them forever," right? Because Akrura is very wise, and Dhritarashtra is very well trained. So he knows the scriptures. So his fault is that his attachment for his son. But otherwise, he knows what's the correct thing to do. "You have surely spoken the truth. But just as a person on the verge of death cannot be saved by nectar, so your instructions do not stay in my heart." So he's saying, what you're speaking is perfectly true, it's wise, it's wonderful, but because of his own attachment, he can't follow it. And what to do? He's king. Dhritarashtra admitted that he was prejudiced by affection for his sons. He told Akrura that he felt helpless to overcome that affection. Like Kunti, the king also understood Krishna's position. Surely everything moves according to the will of the Supreme Lord. No man can influence the Lord's will. Now he has appeared to relieve the earth's burden, and that will surely happen. What then can I do? Destiny is surely all-powerful. Right. So we see as Dhritarashtra knows that the destiny is there, Krishna's pastimes, how it's going to go, and Krishna has come to relieve the burden of the earth, so that means killing all the demons, that includes Duryodhana and his brothers. But he's saying that it's all destiny, so what can I do? So the thing is yes, destiny is what's coming from past work, and free will is what you do with what facility you're in right now. So it means I've worked in the past, that puts me in the present situation. My present situation is from the predestiny from my previous work. But what I do with that now, I have the free will to do the right thing, and that will then establish what the future is. So yes, Dhritarashtra is attached to his sons. He's overwhelmed by that, and he's saying he can't follow these things, but he's saying destiny is the way it is. And destiny is from the past on the present, but the present to the future, that's the free will. He's not willing to accept that responsibility. He's just taking, oh, it's destiny, what can I do? So he just goes on doing what he wants to do and saying, well, the results that are coming, it's destiny. But he's agreeing to that results of destiny, and then trying to say, oh, it's just, you know, the supreme, what can I do? You know, so in other words, he makes decisions himself, but at the same time, when it comes to doing the right thing, then he'll say it's up to the Lord. You know, decisions that are good for him and his son, he makes the effort. But when it's actually not necessarily good for him and his son, though it's the right thing to do, he says, oh, it's up to the Supreme. So we see he's irresponsible in this way. His own personal development is spiritual development is weak. Therefore, his sons are even worse. And so that's the difficulty that comes down. That's the Mahabharata is coming down to, is that the proper aspect of doing what's proper against what's not, and at the same time, that doing what's proper, it should be done in connection with Krishna. Otherwise, you just do what's proper, it's a nice thing, but then your next birth will be a nice birth, but you're still in the material world. But you do it connected to Krishna, you go back to Godhead. Dhritarashtra heard the sages describe how Krishna's mission was to destroy the large number of demoniac kings occupying the earth. Pandu had managed to check them, but since his retirement, they had formed alliances and built huge armies, posing a constant threat to world security. Right? So it had already been that Pandu had kept them in line and everything, because the ones that don't like to act according to the higher authority, they'll come out and fight, and in doing so, you'll remove their armies. You know, Pandu will destroy their armies. And then we'll establish, you know, peace again and all that. But now that Pandu's not there to check them, then what's happening is they're coming up just building their alliances, developing their armies. They put all their effort into that. They're not necessarily into developing the people and the peace that's required for that. Akura could understand that Dhritarashtra was set upon a course that would lead him to his ruin. By favoring his sons over the Pandavas, the king would ultimately ignite a conflict between them that would result in the destruction of the Kuru race. Right? So Akura is seeing this, and he's only there 2 months. Dronacharya, he's living there with them, so he obviously sees it. That's why he asked for that benediction to fight with Arjuna, because he knows when he goes, he'll be obliged to fight for Duryodhana. But the Pandavas will be on the other side. So that means if the opportunity comes up for the two of them to fight, he wants to fight because he has great prowess. Who can he fight with? So for him, it'll be a happy moment to be able to use all his abilities and all that, you know, with someone as qualified as Arjuna. Akura felt there was nothing more he could do, right? He saw everything. He talked to everyone. He spoke to the king. This is the solution. His simple solution is this only. And the king says, I can't do, even though he knows Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But still, he just knows the Supreme Lord controls everything. It's all under his power. So therefore, he's sitting back, and therefore, it's up to the Lord. But when it comes to my own personal things, I'll make the endeavor. But, you know, beyond that, where it comes to the things he doesn't want to do, then he'll just say, well, I'll do what I want, even though it's bad. And then it's left up to the Lord, you know, so... Akura felt there was nothing more he could do. Dhritarashtra refused to accept the responsibility for his acts. Taking his leave from the king, Akura made his way back to Mathura. When Akura was gone, Dhritarashtra pondered on his words. It was true that Pandu's sons were the rightful heirs to the kingdom. that could not be denied. It was especially clear that the eldest of them, Yudhishthira, was qualified to be the king, right? Because he was, it's obvious that the Pandavas are supposed to be, because Pandu was the one. So even if Dhritarashtra took on as the king for some time, now that Pandu's sons are there, they would naturally come in. It wouldn't be Dhritarashtra's sons. You wouldn't skip like that. The king had now seen how the prince was noted for his honesty, patience, kindness, and unswerving adherence to duty. Along with his brothers, he was a firm favorite of the people, right? The people liked him. It's obvious that the elders like him. It's obvious to the others who he works with, it works really well. Then to the citizens, then they very much appreciate him, because we haven't heard the citizens love Duryodhana. You know, he's there. But we saw in the assembly, many thought Duryodhana was, you know, his prowess was great and his what he did was wonderful, but it's not necessarily that he should be the king over Yudhishthira. You know, he's a great king and someone to talk about, but not necessarily the king. Along with his brothers, he was a firm favorite of the people. The citizens had loved Pandu, and it seemed to them that he was living among them as his sons. Everywhere, people spoke of their desire to see Yudhishthira installed as the king. Right? So Dhritarashtra will know this because spies are out, and spies are always going to hang out in, you know, places, public places where people hang out. You know, the places like, say, you know, the hotels and the tea shops and, you know, any place where people just go and sit down to, they have nothing to do, so they go there. So what are they going to discuss, right? So they're going to discuss politics and economics and other things like that. That's just always what people do. And in that, then you'll hear what the people think, right? Because it's unabashed, they're just speaking. And then the spies will then inform the king, so he knows what's going on in the kingdom, if there's anything. Dhritarashtra had heard their talks. Quote, "Now that we have a qualified prince, why should the blind Dhritarashtra remain king? Let us place the pious Yudhishthira on the throne. He will surely be a righteous and benevolent ruler." Right? So he's heard these things. That means they're not complaining that Dhritarashtra's on the throne before, because he's in the family and he's done a nice job. We haven't heard that anything's gone wrong. So, you know, he's been trained. But now that they have a qualified person, right? The Pandavas were young, they were being trained, they were going to the Gurukul. But now that they've graduated and they've been trained in everything, then the point is, we have a qualified prince, why they shouldn't be the king? Dhritarashtra consulted with Bhishma, Vidura, and the Brahmanas. They all decided that Yudhishthira should be installed as prince regent. The ceremony was soon performed, and the people rejoiced. Right? The prince regent means he's the prince, now it's just a matter of final training, he will be the king. Like that. It's just a matter of when he's gotten the full, because up to this point they've been trained by Drona, but now they have to be actually in the palace and being trained by the various personalities in the palace, by the generals, by the prime minister, by all the different ministers put in their input and all that, the Rajguru, all these different things. Duryodhana, however, seized with indignation, right, of course. How had his father bypassed him to make Yudhishthira prince and regent? He's saying bypass as if he's the natural one and he's gone past him to Yudhishthira, when actually it's no, Yudhishthira's the one. How could he bypass Yudhishthira to make Duryodhana? So he didn't bypass him, but that's how he'll feel because of his attachments and all that. So we can see is that this comes up. The problem is that much of the time in disagreements, it's persons are seeing in their own mind that this is correct, but there's some fault in the position that they're seeing from, right? Does that make sense? Like if I see, let's say I'm standing inside and I'm looking out the window, but the window's dirty, I'll wonder, why is it that it's gray out? Why isn't it so bright? So from my position, that's what I'm seeing, but my position is wrong. Does that make sense? So sometimes when you have two people and there's a disagreement, then you may find that someone has the correct position, one has the wrong position, and they both think they're correct. But if they're both sitting in a proper position, then it changes the view. Okay, so now we're going to start another how you say, aspect, because now he sees that Duryodhana, however, seized with indignation, how had his father bypassed him to make Yudhishthira prince regent? When Bhima sneered at his distress, making it even more intolerable, he went with Karna and Dushasana to discuss with Shakuni a way to eradicate the Pandavas. Right. So now we're going to hear how are they, what are their plans, how are they going to try to get rid of them. So he sees that it's always the way it is in the material world. There's some glorious thing, then the sun goes down, then it goes back up. You know, so like this, it'll be something. You see, before he tried to get rid of Bhima, and then from that, then there's a distressful condition. Bhima came back even more powerful. Then in the battle, then the others, they go out first to try to, that we're going to do, and so it's, it looks bad for the Pandavas, but then it comes out the other way, better for them. Then there's a disturbing thing here. Akura comes and he explains it to Dhritarashtra. Then they make him the prince regent. You know, so you always see how the current of activities go. It's always going up. It's always going down. It's just how Krishna's energy moves. It's always oscillating to create variation. So if one's always absorbed in Krishna, the variation doesn't bother you. It's just new ways to absorb yourself in Krishna. But if one's attached to the situation, then they change, it will be distressful. So, yes. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki.